meanly written role that was played very badly. Well, the actor, John Lee, after being hit with an apple thrown during the performance, stopped and he asked the audience, "Is it personal? Is it me or the matter?" Well, it turned out to be both, but Sheridan immediately rewrote it. This version was first broadcast in 1968.
World Theatre. As part of the Flora Robson Festival, we present Sheridan's The Rivals, in which Dame Flora has chosen to play Mrs. Malaprop. Peter Pratt plays Sir Anthony Absolute, Christine Finn, Lydia Languish, Bernard Brown, Captain Absolute, and William Ingram, Bob Akers. The Rivals.
What? Thomas!
Eh?
Thomas!
Odds life, Mr. Fagg. Give us your hand, my old fellow servant.
Who the deuce thought of seeing you in Bath?
Sure, Master thought another fit of the gout was coming to make him a visit, so he'd a mind to get the slip and whip. We were all off at an hour's warning.
Aye, aye, hasty and everything, or it would not be Sir Anthony Absolute.
But tell us, Mr. Fagg, how does young Master Hod? Sir Anthony will stare to see the captain here.
I do not serve Captain Absolute now. I am employed by Ensign Beverly.
I doubt, Mr. Fagg, you ain't changed for the better.
I have not changed, Thomas. Huh? Captain Absolute and Ensign Beverly are one and the same person.
Oh, God, the devil they are. This is some freak, I warrant. Do tell us, Mr. Fagg, the meaning of it.
You'll be secret, Thomas.
Here's a coach horse.
Why, then, my master is in love with a lady of very singular taste.
Oh.
A lady who likes him better as a half-pay ensign than if she knew he was the son and heir to Sir Anthony Absolute, a baronet of 3,000 a year.
That is an odd taste indeed. May one hear her name?
Miss Lydia Languish. Ah, but there is an old tough aunt in the way. Though, by the by, she's never seen my master, for we got acquainted with Miss while on a visit to Gloucestershire.
But pray, Mr. Fagg, what kind of a place is this Bath? I had heard a deal of it. Here's a mort of merrymaking, eh?
Yeah, pretty well, Thomas, pretty well. But damn the place. I'm tired of it. Their regular hours stupefy me. Not a fiddle nor card after 11.
Oh,
however, Mr. Falkland's gentleman and I keep it up a little in private parties. I'll introduce you there, Thomas. You'll like him much.
Sure, I know Mr. Dupain.
Oh.
You know his master is to marry Madame Julia.
Oh, I had forgotten. But, hold.
Eh?
Mark, Thomas.
Zooks, 'tis the captain. Is that the lady with him?
No, that's Madame Lucy, my master's mistress's maid. They lodge at that house. But I must after him to tell him the news.
Odd, he's giving her money. Well, Mr. Fagg?
Goodbye, Thomas.
Indeed, Mum, I traversed half the town in search of it. I don't believe there's a circulating library in Bath I haven't been at.
Oh, did you inquire for the delicate distress?
Yes, indeed, Mum, I asked everywhere for it, and I might have brought it from Mr. Frederick's, but Lady Slattern Lounger, who had just sent it home, had so soiled and dog's-eared it, Mum, it won't fit for a Christian to read.
Oh, yes, I always know when Lady Slattern has been before me. She has a most observing thumb, and I believe cherishes her nails for the convenience of making marginal notes. Well, child, what have you brought me?
Oh, here, Mum. This is the Gordian knot, and this, Peregrine Pickle. Here are the Tears of Sensibility in Humphrey Clinker. Oh, and this is the Memoirs of a Lady of Quality, written by herself. And here, the second volume of The Sentimental Journey.
Give me the salver latterly.
Is it a blue cover, Mum?
My smelling bottle, you simpleton.
Oh, the drops. Here, Mum.
Hold. Here's someone coming. Quick, see who it is. Surely I heard my cousin Julia's voice.
Oh, lad, Mum, here is Miss Melville.
My dearest Julia, how delighted am I?
My dearest Lydia.
I have a thousand things to tell you, but first inform me, what has conjured you to Bath? Is Sir Anthony here?
He is. We are arrived within this hour, and I suppose he will be here to wait on Mrs. Malaprop as soon as he is dressed.
Then before we are interrupted, let me impart to you some of my distress. My letters have informed you of my whole connection with Beverly.
Indeed.
But I have lost him, Julia. My aunt has discovered our intercourse by a note she intercepted and has confined me ever since.
Oh, Lydia.
Yet, would you believe it, she has fallen absolutely in love with a tall Irish baronet she met one night since we have been here at Lady MacShuffle's Rout.
Oh, you jest, Lydia.
Nay, upon my word. She really carries on a kind of correspondence with him. Under a feigned name, though, till she chooses to be known to him. But it is a Delia or a Celia, I assure you.
Oh, then surely she's now more indulgent to her niece.
Quite the contrary. Since she has discovered her own frailty, she's become more suspicious of mine.
Oh.
Ah, then I must inform you of another plague. Mm. That odious Acres is to be in Bath today, so that I protest I shall be teased out of all spirits.
Oh, come, come, Lydia, hope for the best. Sir Anthony shall use his interest with Mrs. Malaprop. Yet consider, you tell me Beverly is but an ensign, and you have £30,000.
But you know I lose most of my fortune if I marry without my aunt's consent till of age. And that is what I have determined to do ever since I knew the penalty. Nor could I love the man who would wish to wait a day for the alternative.
Nay, this is caprice.
What? Does Julia tax me with caprice? I thought her love of Falkland had inured her to it.
I do not love even his faults.
But apropos, you have sent to him, I suppose?
Oh, not yet, upon my word. Nor has he the least idea of my being in Bath. Sir Anthony's resolution was so sudden I could not inform him of it.
Well, Julia, you are your own mistress, though under the protection of Sir Anthony. Yet have you for this long year been a slave to the caprice, the whim, the jealousy of this ungrateful Falkland. Tell me, candidly, had he never saved your life, do you think you should have been attached to him as you are? Believe me, the rude blast that overset your boat was a prosperous gale of love to him.
Gratitude may have strengthened my attachment to Mr. Falkland, but I loved him before he had preserved me. Yet surely that alone were an obligation sufficient.
Obligation? Why, a water spaniel would have done as much.
Oh,
well, I should never think of giving my heart to a man because he could swim.
Oh, come, Lydia, you are too inconsiderate.
Nay, I do but jest.
Oh, Mum, here is Sir Anthony Absolute just come home with your aunt.
Oh,
lad, Mum, they're both coming upstairs.
Well, I'll not detain you, cos there, through my room, you'll find another staircase.
Adieu.
Yeah, dear Lucy, hide these books, quick. Fling Peregrine Pickle under the toilet. Throw Roderick Random into the closet.
Ooh.
Thrust Lord Aimworth under the sofa. Cram Ovid behind the bolster. There. Put the man of feeling into your pocket. So. Now, the Four Dices sermons open on the table.
Oh, burn it, Mum. The hairdresser's torn away as far as proper pride.
Never mind. Open at sobriety. Fling me Lord Chesterfield's letters.
Letters, yes.
Now, four of them.
There, Sir Anthony. There sits the deliberate simpleton who wants to disgrace her family and lavish herself on a fellow not worth a shilling.
Madam, I thought you once...
You thought, miss? I don't know what business you have to think at all. Thought does not become a young woman. But the point we would request of you is that you will promise to forget this fellow. To eliterate him, I say, quite from your memory.
Ah, madam, our memories are independent of our wills. It is not so easy to forget.
But I say it is, miss. There is nothing on earth so easy as to forget, if a person chooses to set about it. I'm sure I have as much forgot your poor dear uncle as if he had never existed. And I thought it my duty so to do. But tell me, will you promise to do as you're bid? Will you take a husband of your friend's choosing?
Madam, I must tell you plainly that had I no preference for anyone else, the choice you have made would be my aversion.
What business have you, miss, with preference and aversion? They don't become a young woman. And you ought to know that as both always wear off, 'tis safest in matrimony to begin with a little aversion. But suppose we were going to give you another choice. Will you promise us to give up this Beverly?
Could I belie my thoughts so far as to give that promise, my actions would certainly as far belie my words.
Take yourself to your room. You are fit company for nothing but your own ill humours.
Willingly, ma'am. I cannot change for the worse.
There's a little intricate hussy for you.
It is not to be wondered at, ma'am. All this is the natural consequence of teaching girls to read.
Oh.
Had I 1,000 daughters, be heaven, I'd as soon have them taught the black art as their alphabet.
Nay, Sir Anthony, you are an absolute misanthrope.
In my way hither, Mrs. Malaprop, I observed your niece's maid coming forth from a circulating library. She had a book in each hand. They were half-bound volumes with marble covers. From that moment I guessed how full of duty I should see her mistress.
Those are vile places indeed.
Madam, a circulating library in a town is as an evergreen tree of diabolical knowledge. It blossoms through the year, and depend on it, Mrs. Malaprop, that they who are so fond of handling the leaves will long for the fruit at last.
Fie, Sir Anthony. You surely speak laconically.
Why, Mrs. Malaprop, in moderation now, what would you have a woman know?
Observe me, Sir Anthony. I would by no means wish a daughter of mine to be a progeny of learning. I don't think so much learning becomes a young woman. For instance, I would never let her meddle with Greek, or Hebrew, or algebra, or simony, or fluxions, or paradoxes, or such inflammatory branches of learning. I would send her at 9 years old to a boarding school in order to learn a little ingenuity and artifice. Then, sir, she should have a supercilious knowledge in accounts. And as she grew up, I would have her instructed in geometry, that she might know something of the contagious countries. But above all, Sir Anthony, she should be a mistress of orthodoxy, that she might not misspell and mispronounce words so shamefully as girls usually do. And likewise that she might reprehend the true meaning of what she is saying. This, Sir Anthony, is what I would have a woman know. And I don't think there is a superstitious article in it.
Well, Mrs. Malaprop, I must confess that you are a truly moderate and polite arguer, for almost every third word you say is on my side of the question. Oh. But, Mrs. Malaprop, to the more important point in debate, you say you have no objection to my proposal.
None, I assure you.
Well, madam, I will write to the boy directly. He knows not a syllable of this yet, though I have for some time had the proposal in my head. He is at present with his regiment.
We have never seen your son, Sir Anthony, but I hope no objection on his side.
Objection? Let him object if he dare. No, no, Mrs. Malaprop. Jack knows that the least demur puts me in a frenzy directly. My process was always very simple in their younger days. 'Twas Jack, do this. If he demurred, I knocked him down, and if he grumbled at that, I always sent him out of the room.
Aye, and the properest way, O my conscience. Nothing is so conciliating to young people as severity. Well, Sir Anthony, I shall give Mr. Akers his discharge and prepare Lydia to receive your son's invocations. And I hope you will represent her to the captain as an object not altogether illegible.
Madam, I will handle the subject prudently.
Oh. Well, at any rate, I shall be glad to get her from under my intuition. She has somehow discovered my partiality for Sir Lucius O'Trigger. Sure, Lucy can't have betrayed me. No, the girl is such a simpleton, I should have made her confess it. Lucy! Lucy!
Did you call, Mum?
Yes, girl. Did you see Sir Lucius while he was out?
Oh, no, indeed, Mum, not a glimpse of him.
Well, come to me presently, and I'll give you another letter to Sir Lucius. But mind, Lucy, if ever you betray what you are entrusted with, unless it be other people's secrets to me, you forfeit my malevolence forever. And your being a simpleton shall be no excuse for your locality.
So, my dear simplicity, let me give you a little respite. Let girls in my station be as fond as they please of appearing expert and knowing in their trusts. Commend me to a mask of silliness and a pair of sharp eyes for my own interest under it. Now, let me see, to what account have I turned my simplicity lately? For abetting Miss Lydia Languish in a design of running away with an ensign, in money, sundry times, £12.12, gowns, five, hats, ruffles, caps, etc., etc., oh, numberless, from the said ensign within this last month, 6 guineas and a half, about a quarter's pay. I turned from Mrs. Malaprop for betraying the young people to her, when I found matters were likely to be discovered, 2 guineas and a black paduasoy. Item from Mr. Akers for carrying divers letters, which I never delivered, 2 guineas and a pair of buckles. Item from Sir Lucius O'Trigger, 3 crowns, 2 gold pocket pieces and a silver snuff box. Oh, well done, simplicity. Yet, I was forced to make my Hibernian believe that he was corresponding not with the aunt, but with the niece. For though not over-rich, I found he had too much pride and delicacy to sacrifice the feelings of a gentleman to the necessities of his fortune.
And what did my father say on hearing that I was at Bath?
Sir, in my life I never saw an elderly gentleman more astonished. Sir Anthony started back two or three paces, rapped out a dozen interjectural oaths, and asked what the devil had brought you here.
Well, sir, what did you say?
Oh, I lied, sir. I forget the precise lie. But you may depend on it, he got no truth from me.
Hmm.
Yet, with submission, for fear of blunders in future, I should be glad to fix what has brought us to Bath, in order that we may lie a little consistently. Sir Anthony's servants were very curious, sir, very curious indeed.
You've said nothing to them?
Oh, no, sir, not a word, sir, not a word. Mr. Thomas, indeed, the coachman, whom I take to be the discreetest of whips...
Steth, you rascal, you've not trusted him.
Oh, no, sir, no, not a syllable. He was indeed a little inquisitive, but I was sly, sir, devilish sly. Hmm. May master, said I, honest Thomas, you know, sir, one says honest to one's inferiors, is come to Bath to recruit... And to give the thing an air, I told Thomas that your honour had already enlisted 5 disbanded chairmen, 7 minority waiters, and 13 billiard markers.
You blockhead, never say more than is necessary.
Oh, I beg pardon, sir, I beg pardon, but with submission, a lie is nothing unless one supports it. Sir, whenever I draw on my invention for a good current lie, I always forge endorsements as well as the bill.
Well, take care you don't hurt your credit by offering too much security.
Oh, Mr. Faulkland. Oh, Mr. Faulkland, sir.
Faulkland, you're welcome to Bath again.
Well, Jack, what news since I left you? How stand matters between you and Lydia?
Faith, much as they were.
Why don't you persuade her to go off with you at once?
What, and lose 2/3 of her fortune? You forget that, my friend. No, I could have brought it to that long ago.
Nay then, you trifle too long. If you are sure of her, propose to the aunt in your own character, and write to Sir Anthony for his consent.
Softly, softly, for though I am convinced my little Lydia would elope with me as Ensign Beverley, yet am I by no means certain that she would take me with the impediment of our friend's consent, a regular humdrum wedding, and the reversion of a good fortune on my side.
Ooh.
No. I must prepare her gradually for the discovery, and make myself necessary to her before I risk it. Well, but Faulkland, you'll dine with us today at the hotel, eh?
Oh, indeed I cannot. I'm not in spirits to be at such a party.
Oh, by heavens, I shall forswear your company. You are the most teasing, captious, incorrigible lover. Do love like a man.
I own I'm unfit for company.
Am not I a lover? I, and a romantic one, too. Yet do I carry everywhere with me such a confounded farrago of doubts, fears, hopes, wishes, and all the flimsy furniture of a country missy's brain? What grounds for apprehension can your whimsical brain conjure up at present?
What grounds for apprehension, did you say? Heavens, are there not 1,000? I fear for her spirits, her health, her life. My absence may fret her. Her anxiety for my return may oppress her gentle temper. And for her health, does not every hour bring me cause to be alarmed? If it rains, some shower may even then have chilled her delicate frame. If the wind be keen, some rude blast may have affected her. The heat of noon, the dews of the evening may endanger the life of her, for whom only I value mine.
So then, Faulkland, if you were convinced that Julia were well and in spirits, you would be entirely content?
I should be happy beyond measure. I'm anxious only for that.
Then, to cure your anxiety at once, Miss Melville is in perfect health and is at this moment in Bath. She has arrived here with my father within this hour.
Can you be serious?
It is as I tell you, upon my honour.
My dear friend, my dear Jack, now nothing on earth can give me a moment's uneasiness.
Sir, Mr. Akers just arrived, is below.
Stay, Faulkland. This Akers lives within a mile of Sir Anthony, very intimate with the family.
Ah.
And he shall tell you how your mistress has been ever since you left her. Fag, show the gentleman up.
Shall, sir.
I should like to ask him a few questions.
He is likewise a rival of mine, that is, of my other selves. For he does not think his friend Captain Absolute ever saw the lady in question, and it's ridiculous enough to hear him complain to me of one Beverley, a concealed skulking.
Jack.
Bob!
My dear friend, noble captain and honest Jack, how dost thou? Just arrived, Faith, as you see. Sir, your humble servant.
Yes, sir.
Oh, it's warm work on the roads, Jack. Odds, whips and wheels, I've travelled like a comet, with a tail of dust all the way as long as the mall.
Ah, Bob, you are indeed an eccentric planet, but we know your attraction hither, eh?
Oh.
Give me leave to introduce Mr. Faulkland to you. Mr. Faulkland, Mr. Akers.
Sir, I'm most heartily glad to see you, sir. I solicit your connections. Hey, Jack.
Yeah.
What does this Mr. Falkland do?
Aye, Bob, Miss Melville's Mr. Falkland.
That's so. Oh, Mr. Falkland, you are indeed a happy man.
I have not seen Miss Melville yet, sir. I hope she enjoyed full health and spirits in Devonshire.
Never knew her better in my life, sir. Never better. Odds, blushes and blooms, she's been as healthy as the German spa.
Oh, there, Jack. You see, she has the advantage of me. I had almost fretted myself ill. Now confess, isn't there something unkind in this violent, robust, unfeeling health?
Oh, it was unkind of her to be well in your absence, to be sure.
sir, you were saying that Miss Melville has been so exceedingly well. What then? She has been merry and gay, I suppose? Always in spirits, hey?
Merry? Odds. Cricket, she's been the belle and spirit of the company wherever she's been. So lively and entertaining, so full of wit and humour.
There, Jack, there. Oh, by my soul, there is an innate levity in woman that nothing can overcome. What happy an eye away.
Have done. How foolish this is. Just now you were only apprehensive for your mistress's spirits.
Why, Jack, have I been the joy and spirit of the company?
No, indeed, you have not.
Have I been lively and entertaining?
Oh, upon my word, I acquit you.
Have I been full of wit and humour?
No, faith, to do you justice, you have been confoundedly stupid, indeed.
What's the matter with the gentleman?
He is only expressing his great satisfaction at hearing that Julia has been so well and happy. That's all, eh, Falkland?
Oh, I'm rejoiced to hear it. Yes, she has a happy disposition.
Oh, that she has indeed, but then she's so accomplished, so sweet a voice, so expert at her harpsichord. Odds, minims and crotchets, how she did chirrup at Mrs. Piano's concert.
Ah, there again. What say you to this? You see, she's been all mirth and song, not a thought of me.
Foe man, is not music the food of love?
Oh, well, it may be so. Pray, Mr. What's his damn name? Do you remember what songs Miss Melville sung?
No, not I, indeed.
Stay now, they were some pretty, melancholy, purling stream airs, I warrant. Perhaps you may recollect, Bob. Did she sing When Absent from My Soul's Delight? When absent from my soul's delight.
Oh, no, that weren't it. Odds, no, I recollect one of them. My heart's my own, my will is free.
Fool that I am, to fix all my happiness on such a trifler. Steth, to make herself the pipe and balladmonger of a circle, to soothe her light heart with catches and glees. What can you say to this, sir?
Why, that I should be glad to hear my mistress have been so merry, sir.
Oh, nay, I'm not sorry that she has been happy. No, I am glad of that. I would not have had her sad or sick, yet surely a sympathetic heart would have shown itself even in the choice of a song. She might have been temperately healthy and somehow plaintively gay. But she has been dancing too, I doubt not.
What does the gentleman say about dancing?
He says the lady we speak of dances as well as she sings.
Oh, aye, truly, does she? Wait. They was at our last race, boy.
The hell and the devil. I have been anxious, silent, pensive, sedentary. My days have been hours of care, my nights of watchfulness. She has been all health, spirit, laugh, song, dance. Oh, damned levity.
For heaven's sake, Falkland, don't expose yourself so.
Oh, well, I'll contain myself. What, Mr. Akers, you were praising Miss Melville's manner of dancing a minuet, eh?
Oh, I dare insure her for that. No, but what I was going to speak of was her country dancing.
Oh!
Oh, it's swimming. She has such an air with her.
No disappointment on her. A minuet I could have forgiven. Zounds, had she made one in a cotillon, I believe I could have forgiven even that. But to be monkey-led for a night, to run the gauntlet through a string of amorous palming puppies, to show paces like a managed filly. Oh, Jack, there never can be but one man in the world whom a truly modest and delicate woman ought to pair with in a country dance, and even then the rest of the couple should be her great uncles and aunts.
Why, to be sure, grandfathers and grandmothers.
Oh, I must leave you. I own I am somewhat flooded. And our confounded Luby has perceived it.
Well, the gentleman weren't angry at my praising his mistress, was he?
Well, a little jealous, I believe, Bob.
Oh, you don't say so. Jealous of me, that's a good joke.
Oh, there's nothing strange in that, Bob. Let me tell you, that sprightly grace and insinuating manner of yours will do some mischief among the girls here.
You joke. Oh, you mischief. Yeah, but you know I'm not my own property. My dear Lydia's forestalled me.
Oh.
Well, she could never abide me in the country because I used to dress so badly. But odds, frogs and tambours, I shan't take matters so here. Now ancient madam has no voice in it, I'll make my old clothes nose, master. I shall straight away cashier the Antin frock and render my leather breeches incapable. My heir's been in training for some time.
Indeed.
Oh, and the offside curls are a little restive, where my hind part takes it very kindly.
Oh, you'll polish, I doubt
not. Oh, absolutely, I propose so. Then if I can find out this Ensign Beverley, odds, triggers and flints, I'll make him know the difference of it.
Spoke like a man. But pray, Bob, I observe you've got an odd kind of a new method of swearing.
You take notice of it. Yeah, 'tis genteel, isn't it? Oh. Well, I didn't invent it myself, though. But a commander in our militia, oh, a great scholar, I assure you, says there's no meaning in the common odds, and nothing but their antiquity makes them respectable, because, he says, the ancients would never stick to an oath or two, but would say, by Jove, or by Bacchus, or by Mars, well, according to the sentiment. So that, to swear with propriety, says my little major, the oath should be an echo to the sense. And this we call the oath referential or sentimental swearing. Tis genteel, isn't it?
Oh, very genteel and very new indeed. And I dare say we'll supplant all other figures of imprecation.
Oh, aye. The best terms will grow obsolete. Dams have had their day.
Sir Anthony is below.
Oh, show him up directly.
Oh, you have business with Sir Anthony. I expect a message from Mrs. Malaprop at my lodgings. Well, adieu, Jack. We must meet at night when you shall give me a dozen bumpers to little Lydia.
That I will, with all my heart.
Adieu, Jack.
Now for a parental lecture. I hope he has heard nothing of the business that has brought me here. I wish the gout had held him fast in Devonshire with all my soul.
Sir, I'm delighted to see you here, and looking so well. Your sudden arrival at Bath made me apprehensive for your health.
Very apprehensive, I dear Sir Jack. What, you are recruiting here, eh?
Yes, sir, I am on duty.
Well, Jack, I am glad to see you, though I do not expect it, for I was going to write you on a little matter of business. Jack, I have been considering that I grew old and infirm and shall probably not trouble you long.
Oh, pardon me, sir, I never saw you look more strong and hearty, and I pray frequently that you may continue, sir.
I hope your prayers may be heard with all my heart. Well, then, Jack, I have been considering that I am so strong and hearty I may continue to plague you for a long time. Now, Jack, I am sensible that the income from your commission and what I have hitherto allowed you is but a small pittance for a lad of your spirit.
Oh, sir, you are very good.
And it is my wish, while yet I live, to have my boy make some figure in the world. I have resolved, therefore, to fix you at once in a noble independence.
Well, let my future life, sir, speak my gratitude. Yet, sir, I presume you would not wish me to quit the army.
Well, that shall be as your wife chooses.
My wife, sir. A wife, sir, did you say?
My wife. Why, did I not mention her before?
Not a word of her, sir.
Oh, sure. I mustn't forget her, though. Yes, Jack, the independence I was talking of is by a marriage. The fortune is settled with a wife, and I suppose that makes no difference.
Sir, you amaze me.
God's life, sir. If you have the estate, you must take it with the livestock on it as it stands.
If my happiness is to be the price, I must beg leave to decline the purchase. Pray, sir, who is the lady?
What's that to you, sir? Come, give me a promise to love and to marry her directly.
Well, sure, sir, this is not very reasonable to summon my affections for a lady I know nothing of.
I am sure, sir, it is more unreasonable in you to object to a lady you know nothing of.
Then, sir, I must tell you plainly that my inclinations are fixed on another. Sir, my heart is engaged to an angel.
Then pray let it send an excuse. It is very sorry, but business prevents it waiting on her.
But my vows are pledged to
her. Let her foreclose, Jack, let her foreclose. They are not worth redeeming. Besides, you have the angel's vows in exchange, I suppose, so there can be no loss there.
You must excuse me, sir, if I tell you once for all that in this point I cannot obey you.
Harkee, Jack. I've heard you for some time with patience. I have been cool, quite cool. But take care. You know I am compliance itself when I have my own way. But don't put me in a frenzy.
Sir, I must repeat it. In this I cannot obey you.
No, damn me if I ever call you Jack again while I live.
Nay, sir, but hear me.
Sir, I won't hear a word, not a word. But not one word. So give me your promise by a nod, and I'll tell you what check I mean you, Doug, if you don't. Bye!
What's the promise to link myself to some mass of ugliness?
Soon, sinner, the lady shall be as ugly as I choose. She shall have a hump on each shoulder. Oh. Her one eye shall roll like the bulls in Coxey's museum. Oh. She shall have a skin like a mummy and the beard of a Jew. She shall be all this, sirrah. Yet will I make you ogle her all day and sit up all night to write sonnets on her beauty.
Oh, this is reason and moderation indeed.
None of your sneering jackanapes. No grinning puppy.
Indeed, sir, I never was in a worse humour for mirth
none
in my life.
None of your passion, sir. None of your violence.
Indeed, sir, I never was cooler in my life.
It's a confounded lie. I know you're in a passion in your heart.
Nay, sir, upon my word.
So you will fly out. Can't you be cool like me? Passion is of no service, you impudent, insolent, overbearing reprobate.
Nay, sir,
There you sneer again. Don't provoke me. But you rely upon the mildness of my temper. You dog. You play upon the meekness of my disposition. But mark, I give you 6 hours and a half to consider of this. If you then agree without any condition to do everything on earth that I choose, why, confound you, I may in time forgive you. If not soon, I'll disown you. I'll disinherit you. I'll undet you. And damn me if ever I call you Jack again.
Mild, gentle, considerate father. I wonder what old wealthy hag it is he wants to bestow on me. Yet he married himself for love, and was in his youth a bold intriguer and a gay companion.
Assuredly, sir, our father is wroth to a degree. Were I in your place and found my father such very bad company, I should certainly drop his acquaintance.
Cease your impertinence, sir, at present. Stand out of the way.
Oh. So, Sir Anthony trims my master. He is afraid to reply to his father, then he vents his spleen on poor Fag. When one is vexed by one person to revenge oneself on another who happens to come in the way is the vilest injustice. Oh, it shows the worst temper, the basest...
Mr. Fag! Mr. Fag, your master calls you! Quick, Mr. Fag!
Quick! You impudent jackanapes! Am I to be commanded by you two, you little impertinent, insolent...
So, I shall have another rival to add to my mistress's list, Captain Absolute. Poor Acres is dismissed. Oh, Sir Lucius is generally more punctual when he expects to hear from his dear Dahlia, as he calls her. I wonder he's not here. Though I should not be paid so well if my hero knew that Dahlia was near 50 and her own mistress.
Ah, my little ambassadress. Oh. Upon my conscience, I have been looking for you. I have been on the South Parade this half hour.
Oh, Geminine, I've been waiting for your worship here on the North.
Faith, maybe that was the reason we did not meet. Well, but my little girl, have you nothing for me?
Yes, but I have. I've got a letter for you in my pocket.
Oh, Faith, I guessed you weren't come empty-handed. Well, let me see what the dear creature says.
There, Sir Lucius.
Sir, there is often a sudden incentive impulse in love that has a greater induction than years of domestic combination. Such was the commotion I felt at the first superfluous view of Sir Lucius O'Trigger. Very pretty, upon my word. A female punctuation forbids me to say more, yet let me add that it will give me joy infallible to find Sir Lucius worthy the last criterion of my affections, Dahlia. Upon my conscience, Lucy, your lady's a great mistress of language. Faith, she's quite the queen of the dictionary, for the divil a word dare refuse coming at her call, though one would think it was quite out of hearing.
Aye, sir, a lady of her experience.
Experience? What, at 17?
Oh, true, sir, true, but Sir Lucius, if you were to hear how she talks of you...
Oh, tell her I'll make her the best husband in the world, and Lady O'Trigger into the bargain. But we must get the old gentlewoman's consent and do everything fairly.
Nay, Sir Lucius, I thought you weren't rich enough to be so nice.
Upon my word, young woman, you have hit it. I am so poor that I can't afford to do a dirty action. If I did not want money, I'd steal your mistress and her fortune with a great deal of pleasure. However, my pretty girl, here's a little something to buy you a ribbon.
Oh, sir.
And meet me in the evening and I'll give you an answer to this. So, hussy, take a kiss beforehand to put you in mind.
Oh, lad. Oh, Lucius. Oh, I never seed such a gentleman. My lady won't like
you if you're so impudent.
Faith, she will, Lucy. That same modesty is a quality in a lover more praised by the women than liked. So if your mistress asks you whether Sir Lucius ever gave you a kiss, tell her 50, my dear.
What? Would you have me tell a lie?
Oh, then, you baggage, I'll make it a truth presently.
Shame now. Oh, here's someone coming up.
Oh, Faith, I quiet your conscience.
So, ma'am. I humbly beg pardon.
Oh, lad. Oh, now, Mr. Fagg, you flurry one so.
Come, Lucy, there's no one by, so a little less simplicity with a grain or two more sincerity, if you please. You play false with us, madam. I saw you give the baronet a letter.
You gentleman's gentleman is so hasty. That letter was from Mrs. Malaprop, you simpleton. She's taken with Sir Lucius's address.
How? What taste some people have. Why, I suppose I've walked by her window 100 times.
Oh, Lord.
But, what says our young lady? Any message to my master?
Oh, sad news, Mr. Fagg. A worse rival than Acres. Sir Anthony Absolute has proposed his son.
What? Captain Absolute?
Even so, I overheard it all. Oh, but Mr. Fagg, tell your master not to be cast down by this.
Oh, he'll be disconsolate.
And charge him not to think of quarrelling with young Absolute.
Never fear. We will.
"'Tis just as Fagg told me, indeed. "'Whimsical enough, Faith. "'My father wants to force me to marry the very girl I'm plotting to run away with. "'He must not know of my connection with her yet a while. "'He has too summary a method of proceeding in these matters. "'However, I'll read my recantation instantly. "'So, here he comes. "'He looks plaguey, gruff. "'Now for a penitential face.
"'Father.'
Hello, get out of my way.
Sir, you see a penitent before you.
I see an impudent scoundrel before me.
A sincere penitent. I am come, sir, to acknowledge my error and to submit entirely to your will.
What's that?
I have been revolving and reflecting and considering on your past goodness and kindness and condescension to me.
Well, sir?
Why then, sir, the result of my reflections is a resolution to sacrifice every inclination of my own to your satisfaction.
Why, now you talk sense. Absolute sense. I never heard anything more sensible in my life. Confound you, you shall be Jack again.
I am happy in the appellation.
Why then, Jack, my dear Jack, I will now inform you who the lady really is. Nothing but your passion and violence, you silly fellow, prevented my telling you at first. Prepare, Jack, for wonder and rapture. Prepare. What think you of Miss Lydia Languish?
Languish? Oh, what, the languishes of Worcestershire?
Worcestershire, no! Did you never meet Mrs. Malaprop and her niece, Miss Languish, who came into our country just before you were last ordered to your regiment?
Malaprop? Languish? I don't remember ever to have heard the names before. Yet stay, I think I do recollect something. Languish... Languish. She squints, don't she? A little red-haired girl.
Squints? A red-haired girl? Zoons, no.
Well, then I must have forgot. It can't be the same person.
Jack, what think you of blooming, love-breathing 17?
Oh, as to that, sir, I'm quite indifferent. If I can please you in the matter, it is all I desire.
Nay, but Jack, such eyes, so innocently wild, so bashfully irresolute, not a glance but speaks and kindles some thought of love. Then, Jack, her cheek, so deeply blushing at the insinuation of her telltale eyes. Then, Jack, her lips. Oh, Jack, lips smiling at their own discretion, and if not smiling more, sweetly pouting more, lovely in sullenness.
That she indeed. Well done, old gentleman.
Then, Jack, her neck. Oh, Jack.
And which is to be mine, sir, the niece or the aunt?
Why, you unfailing, insensible puppy, I despise you. When I was your age, such a description would have made me fly like a rocket. The aunt, indeed. Odd's life. When I ran away with your mother, I would not have touched anything old or ugly to gain an empire.
Not to please your father, sir.
To please my father? Yes. My father, indeed, a desire. That's quite another matter. Oh, he wasn't the indulgent father that I am, Jack.
Oh, I dare say not, sir.
But, Jack, you are not sorry to find your mistress is so beautiful.
Sir, I repeat it. If I please you in this affair, 'tis all I desire. Not that I think a woman the worse for being handsome, but, sir, if you please to recollect, you before hinted something about a hump or two, one eye, and a few more graces of that kind. Now, without being very nice, I own I should rather choose a wife of mine to have the usual number of limbs and a limited quantity of back, and though one eye may be very agreeable, yet as the prejudice has always run in favour of two, I would not wish to affect a singularity in that article.
What a phlegmatic shot it is! Why, sirrah, you're an anchorite, a vile insensible stock. Odds life, I've a great mind to marry the girl myself.
I am entirely at your disposal, sir. If you should think of addressing Miss Languish yourself, I suppose you would have me marry the aunt. Or if you should change your mind and take the old lady, it is the same to me. I'll marry the niece.
Jack, that either a very great hypocrite or... Eh, but come, I know your indifference on such a subject must be all a lie. Oh. I'll write a note to Mrs. Malaprop, and you shall visit the lady directly. I'll never forgive you if you don't come back stark mad with rapture and impatience. If you don't eke ahead, I will marry the girl myself.
Your being Sir Anthony's son, Captain, would itself be a sufficient accommodation. But from the ingenuity of your appearance, I am convinced you deserve the character here given of you.
Permit me to say, madam, that as I never yet have had the pleasure of seeing Miss Languish, my principal inducement in this affair at present is the honour of being allied to Mrs. Malaprop, of whose intellectual accomplishments, elegant manners, and unaffected learning, no tongue is silent.
Sir, you do me infinite honour. I beg, Captain, you'll be seated.
Ma'am.
Few gentlemen nowadays know how to value the ineffectual qualities in a woman. Few think how a little knowledge becomes a gentlewoman. Men have no sense now but for the worthless flower of beauty.
Oh, it is but too true indeed, ma'am. Yet I fear our ladies should share the blame. They think our admiration of beauty so great that knowledge in them would be superfluous. Oh. Thus, like garden trees, they seldom show fruit till time has robbed them of the more specious blossom. Few, like Mrs. Malaprop and the orange tree, are rich in both at once.
Sir, you overpower me with good breeding. He is the very pineapple of politeness. You are not ignorant, Captain, that this giddy girl has somehow contrived to fix her affections on a beggarly, strolling, eavesdropping ensign, whom none of us have seen and nobody knows anything of.
Oh, I have heard the silly affair before. I'm not at all prejudiced against her on that account.
You are very good and very considerate, Captain. Long ago I laid my positive conjunctions on her never to think on the fellow again. But behold, this very day, I have interceded another letter from him. Hmm? I believe I have it in my pocket.
Oh, the devil, my last note. Oh, the little traitress Lucy.
There. Perhaps you may know the writing.
I think I have seen the hand before. Yes, I certainly must have seen this hand before.
Nay, but read it, Captain.
My soul's idol, my adored Lydia... very tender indeed.
Tender, aye, and profane too, my conscience.
I am excessively alarmed at the intelligence you send me, the more so as my new rival...
That's you, sir.
Has universally the character of being an accomplished gentleman and a man of honour. Well, that's handsome enough.
Oh, the fellow has some design in writing, sir.
That he had, I'll answer for him, ma'am.
But go on, sir. You'll see presently.
As for the old... as for the old weather-beaten she-dragon who guards you, who can he mean by that?
Me, sir, me.
Oh.
He means me there. What do you think now?
Impudent scum.
But go on a little further.
It shall go hard, but I will elude her vigilance, as I am told that the same ridiculous vanity which makes her dress up her coarse features and deck her dull chat with hard words which she don't understand.
There, sir, an attack upon my language. Oh. What do you think of that? An aspersion upon my parts of speech. Was ever such a brute? Sure, if I reprehend anything in this world, it is the use of my oracular tongue and a nice derangement of epitaphs.
He deserves to be hanged and quartered. Let me see. Same ridiculous vanity.
You need not read it again, sir.
Oh, I beg pardon, ma'am. Does also lay her open to the grossest deceptions from flattery and pretended admiration. An impudent coxcomb. So that I have a scheme to see you shortly with the old harridan's consent, and even to make her a go-between in our interviews. Was ever such assurance?
Did you ever hear anything like it? He'll elude my vigilance, will he? Yes, yes. He's very likely to enter these doors. We'll try who can plot best.
So we will, ma'am. So we will.
Well, but Mrs. Malaprop, as the girl seems so infatuated by this fellow, suppose you were to wink at her corresponding with him for a little time. Oh. Let her even plot an elopement with him. Then do you connive at her escape, while I, just in the nick, will have the fellow laid by the heels and fairly contrive to carry her off in his stead.
I am delighted with the scheme. Never was anything better perpetrated.
But pray, could not I see the lady for a few minutes now? I should like to try her temper a little.
Why, I don't know. I doubt she's not prepared for a visit of this kind. Oh. There is a decorum in these matters.
Oh, Lord, you won't mind me. Only tell her Beverly that...
Sir?
Gently, good tongue.
What did you say of Beverly?
Oh, I was going to propose that you should tell her by way of jest that it was Beverly who was below. She'd come down fast enough then, eh?
To a trick she well deserves. Besides, you know the fellow tells her he'll get my consent to see her. He'll make me a go-between in their interviews. Come down, Lydia. I don't wonder at your laughing. His impudence is truly ridiculous.
It is very ridiculous upon my soul, ma'am.
Oh, the little hussy won't hear. Well, I'll go and tell her at once who it is. She shall know that Captain Absolute has come to wait on her. And I'll make her behave as becomes a young woman.
Oh, one would think now that I might throw off all disguise at once and seize my prize with security. But such is Lydia's caprice that to undeceive were probably to lose her. I'll walk aside and see whether she knows me.
What a scene am I now to go through? Surely nothing can be more dreadful than to be obliged to listen to the loathsome addresses of a stranger to one's heart. Ah, there stands the hated rival. An officer, too. But, oh, how unlike my Beverly. I wonder he don't begin. Truly, he seems a very negligent wooer. Quite a disease, upon my word. I'll speak first. Mr. Absolute.
Ma'am.
Oh, heavens, Beverly! For heaven's sake, how came you here?
Briefly, I have deceived your aunt. I was informed that my new rival was to visit here this evening, and contriving to have him kept away, have passed myself on her for Captain Absolute.
Oh, charming! And she really takes you for the young Absolute?
Oh, she's convinced of it. But we trifle with our precious moments. Then let me now conjure my kind, my condescending angel, to fix the time when I may rescue her from undeserving persecution, and with a licensed warmth plead for my reward.
Will you then, Beverly, consent to forfeit that portion of my paltry wealth, that burden on the wings of love?
Oh, come to me rich, only thus, in loveliness. By heaven, I would fling all goods of fortune from me with a prodigal hand, to enjoy the scene where I might clasp my Lydia to my bosom and say, the world affords no smile to me, but here. If she holds out now, the devil's in it.
Now could I fly with him to the Antipodes, but my persecution has not yet come to a crisis.
I am impatient to know how the little hussy deports herself.
So pensive, Lydia. Is then your warmth abated?
Warmth abated? So, she has been in a passion, I suppose.
No, nor ever can while I have life.
An ill-tempered little devil. She'll be in a passion all her life, will she?
Think not the idle threats of my ridiculous aunt can ever have any weight with me.
Very dutiful, upon my word.
Let her choice be Captain Absolute, but Beverly is mine.
I am astonished at her assurance. To his face! This to his face?
Thus, then, let me enforce my suit.
My poor young man, down on his knees, entreating for pity. I can contain no longer. Why, thou vixen, I have overheard you. Captain Absolute, I know not how to apologize for her shocking rudeness.
Oh, I have hopes, madam, that time will bring the young lady to her senses.
Oh, there's nothing to be hoped for from her. She's as headstrong as an allegory on the banks of the Nile.
Nay, madam, what do you charge me with now?
Why, thou unblushing rebel, didn't you tell this gentleman to his face that you loved another better? Didn't you boast that Beverly, that stroller Beverly, possessed your heart? Tell me that, I say.
It is true, ma'am, and none but Beverly...
Hold! Hold, assurance! You shall not be so rude.
Nay, pray, Mrs. Malaprop, don't stop the young lady's speech. She's very welcome to talk thus. It does not hurt me in the least, I assure you.
You are too good, Captain, too amiably patient. But come with me, miss. Let us see you again soon, Captain. Remember what we have fixed.
May every blessing wait on my Beverly, my love.
I'll choke the word in your throat. Come along. Come along.
Indeed, David, do you think I become it so?
Oh, you're quite another creature, believe me, master. By the mass. And with any luck, we shall see the Devon monkey rony in all the print shops in Bath.
Well, dress does make a difference, David.
Oh, dear, it's Sir Lucius O'Trigger to wait on you, sir.
Oh, my dear Sir Lucius, I kiss your hands.
Pray, my friend, what has brought you so suddenly to Bath?
Faith, I followed Cupid's jack-o'-lantern and find myself in a quagmire at last. In short, I've been very ill-used, Sir Lucius.
Pray, what is the case?
Well, mark me, Sir Lucius. I fall as deep as need be in love with a young lady. Her friends take my part. I follow her to Bath, send word of my arrival, and receive answer that the lady is to be otherwise disposed of. Well, this, Sir Lucius, I call being ill-used.
Very ill, upon my conscience. Pray, can you divine the cause of...
Why, there's the matter. She has another lover, one Beverly, who I'm told he's now in Bath.
A rival in the case, is there? And you think he has supplanted you unfairly?
Unfairly? Well, to be sure he has. I mean, he never could have done it fairly.
Then sure you know what is to be done.
Not I, upon my soul.
We wear no swords here, but you understand me.
What? Fight him?
Aye, to be sure. What could I mean else?
Oh, but he's given me no provocation.
Now, I think he's given you the greatest provocation in the world. Can a man commit a more heinous offence against another than to fall in love with the same woman? Oh, by my soul, it is the most unpardonable breach of friendship.
Breach of friendship? But I've no acquaintance with this man. I never saw him in my life.
That's no argument at all. He has the less right then to take such a liberty.
Dad, that's true. Ooh, I grow full of anger, Sir Lucius. I fire apace. Odds, hilts and blades. I find a man may have a deal of valour in him and not know it. But couldn't I contrive to have a little right on my side?
What the devil signifies right when your honour is concerned?
Your words are a grenadier's march to my heart. Odds, flints, pans and triggers. I'll challenge him directly.
Come. There must be no passion at all in the case. These things should always be done civilly.
Oh, I must be in a passion, Sir Lucius. I must be in a rage. Oh, dear Sir Lucius, let me be in a rage if you love me. Now, come. Here's pen and paper. Why would the ink were red? Indict, I say, indict. How shall I begin? Odds, bullets and blades. I'll write a good bold hand, however.
Pray, compose yourself.
Come now, shall I begin with an oath? Oh, do, Sir Lucius, let me begin with a dummy.
Oh, do the thing decently and like a Christian. Begin now. Sir.
Oh, that's too civil by half.
To prevent the confusion that might arise.
Might arise. Well?
From our both addressing the same lady.
Aye, there's the reason. Same lady. Well?
I shall expect the honour of your company to settle our pretensions in Kingsmead Fields.
Mead Fields. So, that's done. Well, I'll fold it presently, and my own crest, hand and dagger, shall be the seal.
Now, I leave you to fix your own time. Take my advice, and you'll decide it this evening if you can. Mm. Then let the worst come of it, 'twill be off your mind tomorrow.
Very true.
So I shall see nothing more of you unless it be by letter till the evening. I would do myself the honour to carry your message, but to tell you a secret, I believe I shall have just such another affair on my own hands.
Oh.
There is a gay captain here who put a jest on me lately at the expense of my country, and I only want to fall in with the gentleman to call him out.
Oh, boy, my valour, I should like to see you fight first. Odd's life, I should like to see you kill him, if it was only to get a little lesson.
I shall be very proud of instructing you. Let your courage be as keen, but at the same time as polished, as your sword.
To Ensign Beverly. So what's going on now?
Well, Bob, what's this?
A challenge.
Indeed, but what have I to do with this?
Wait, as I think you know something of this fellow, I want you to find him out for me and give him this mortal defiance.
Well, give it to me, and trust me, he gets it.
You're very kind. What it is to have a friend. But you couldn't be my second, could you, Jack?
Why, no, Bob, not in this affair. It would not be quite so proper.
Oh, well, then I must get my friend Sir Lucius. I shall have your good wishes, however, Jack.
Whenever he meets you, believe me.
Sir Anthony Absolute is below, inquiring for the captain.
I'll come instantly.
Well, my little hero, success attend you.
Oh, stay, Jack. Mm. If Beverly should ask you what kind of a man your friend Akers is, do tell him I'm a devil of a fellow, will you, Jack?
To be sure I shall. I'll say you're a determined dog, eh, Bob?
Aye, do. And if that frightens him, well, egad, perhaps he mayn't come. So tell him I generally kill a man a week, will you, Jack?
I will. I'll say you're called in the country fighting Bob.
Right. But you don't wish me to kill him. Do you, Jack?
No, upon my soul, I do not. But a devil of a fellow, eh?
True. But stay, Jack. You may add that you never saw me in such a rage before. A most devouring rage.
I will.
But remember, Jack, determined dog.
Aye, fighting Bob.
Why, thou perverse one, tell me what you can object to him in. Isn't he a handsome man? Tell me that. A genteel man. A pretty figure of a man.
She little thinks whom she is praising.
So is Beverly, ma'am.
No comparisons, miss, if you please. Comparisons don't become a young woman. No. Captain Absolute is indeed a fine gentleman.
How enraged she'll be presently when she discovers her mistake.
Sir Anthony and Captain Absolute are below, ma'am.
Show them up here. Now, Lydia, I insist on your behaving as becomes a young woman. Show your good breeding, at least, though you have forgot your duty.
Madam, I have told you my resolution. I shall not only give him no encouragement, but I won't even speak to or look at him.
Oh. Here we are, Mrs. Malaprop, come to mitigate the frowns of unrelenting beauty. And difficulty enough I had to bring this fellow. I don't know what's the matter, but if I'd not held him by force, he'd have given me the slip.
You have infinite trouble, Sir Anthony, in the affair. I am ashamed for the cause. Lydia, rise, I beseech you. Pay your respects.
I hope, madam, that Miss Languish has reflected on the worth of this gentleman and the regard due to her aunt's choice and my alliance. Now, Jack, speak to her.
What the devil shall I do?
You see, sir, she won't even look at me whilst you are here. Yeah. I knew she wouldn't. I told you so.
Yes. And I hadn't heard my aunt exclaim yet. Sure, she can't have looked at
me. I say, sir, I won't stir a foot yet.
I am sorry to say, Sir Anthony, that my affluence over my niece is very small. Turn round, Lydia. I blush for you.
May I not flatter myself that Miss Languish will assign what cause of dislike she can have to my son?
Why don't you begin, Jack? Speak, you puppy, speak.
Now heaven send she may be too sullen to look round. I must disguise my voice.
Madam.
What the devil ails the fellow? Why don't you speak out? Not stand croaking like a frog in a quinsy.
The excess of my awe and my modesty quite choke me.
Your modesty again. I'll tell you what, Jack. If you don't speak out directly and glibly too, I shall be in such a rage. Mrs. Malaprop, I wish the lady would favour us with something more than a side front.
So all will out, I see. Be not surprised, my Lydia. Suppress all surprise at present.
My Beverly. Is this possible? Well, how can this be? My Beverly.
Tis all over.
Beverly, the devil, Beverly, what can the girl mean? This is my son, Jack Absolute.
For shame, hussy, for shame. Your head runs so on that fellow that you have him always in your eyes. Beg Captain Absolute's pardon directly.
I see no Captain Absolute but my loved Beverly.
So's the girl from had a brainstorm bereading. Has this fellow been playing us a rogue's trick? Come here, sirrah. Huh? Are you my son or not? Answer for your mother, you dog, if you won't for me.
Aye, sir, who are you? Oh, mercy, I begin to suspect.
Oh, ye powers of impudence, befriend me.
Sir Anthony, most assuredly, I am your wife's son, and that I sincerely believe myself to be yours also. I hope my duty is always shown. Mrs. Malaprop, I am your most respectful admirer, and shall be proud to add affectionate nephew.
Sir?
I need not tell my Lydia that she sees her faithful Beverly, who, knowing the singular generosity of her temper, assumed that name and station which has proved a test of the most disinterested love, which he now hopes to enjoy in a more elevated character.
So?
There will be no elopement after all.
Upon me, soul, Jack. Thou art a very impudent fellow. To do you justice, I think I never saw a piece of more consummate assurance.
You flatter me, sir. You compliment. It is my modesty, you know, sir. My modesty that has stood in my way.
Well, I am glad you are not the dull, insensible varlet you pretended to be. However, I'm glad you made a fool of your father, you dog. Huh? You dissembling villain. What? She's Squinch, don't she? A little red-haired girl, eh? Why, you hypocritical young rascal. I wonder you ain't ashamed to hold up your head.
Oh, Lord, Sir Anthony. A new light breaks in upon me. What, Captain, did you write those letters then? What, am I to thank you for the elegant compilation of an old, weather-beaten she-dragon? Hey? Oh, mercy! Was it you that reflected on my parts of speech?
Oh, dear sir, my modesty will be overpowered at last if you don't assist me. I shall certainly not be able to stand it.
Come, Mrs. Malaprop, we must forget and forgive. Come, we must leave them together, Mrs. Malaprop. They long to fly into each other's arms, I warrant. Youth has reason
made.
Oh, life, I'm in such spirit. I don't know what I could not do. Permit me, madam.
The
child in all, I should like to have a little fooling myself, eh?
So much thought bodes me no good.
So grave, Lydia?
Sir?
So, egad, I thought as much that damned monosyllable as froze me.
What, Lydia? Now that we are as happy in our friends' consent as in our mutual
friends'
vows...
consent, indeed.
Oh, come, we must lay aside some of our romance. A little wealth and comfort may be endured, after all. And for your fortune, the lawyers shall make
I
the settlement.
I hate lawyers.
Nay, then we will not wait for their lingering forms, but instantly procure the license
the
and...
The license? I hate license.
Oh, my love, be not so unkind. Thus let me entreat...
What signifies kneeling when you know I must have you?
Huh? Well, nay, madam, there shall be no constraint upon your inclinations, I promise you. If I have lost your heart, I resign the rest.
Gad, I must try what a little spirit will do.
Then, sir, let me tell you, you have been treating me like a child, humouring my romance and laughing, I suppose, at your success.
You wrong me, Lydia, you wrong me, only here.
So while I fondly imagined we were deceiving my relations and flattered myself that I should outwit and incense them all, behold, my hopes are to be crushed at once by my aunt's consent and approbation, and I am myself the only dupe at last. But here, sir, here is the picture which I have worn night and day, in spite of threats and entreaties. There, sir, and be assured, I throw the original from my heart as easily.
Nay, ma'am, we will not differ as to that. Here is the picture of Miss Lydia Languish. What a difference. Aye, there is the heavenly assenting smile that first gave soul and spirit to my hopes. Those are the lips which sealed a vow as yet scarce dry in Cupid's calendar. And there the half-resentful blush that would have checked the ardour of my thanks. Well, all that's passed, all over indeed.
It is your own doing, sir. I suppose you are perfectly satisfied.
Oh, most certainly. Sure, now, this is much better than being in love. What signifies breaking some scores of solemn promises? All that's of no consequence, you know. To be sure, people will say that Miss don't know her own mind.
Oh,
but never mind that. Or perhaps they may be ill-natured enough to hint that the gentleman grew tired of the lady and forsook her.
Oh.
But don't let that fret you.
There is no bearing his insolence.
Come, we must interrupt your billing and cooling a while.
This is worse than your treachery and deceit, you base ingrate.
What the devil's the matter now? Zounds, Mrs. Malaprop, this is the oddest billing and cooing I ever heard. What the deuce is the meaning of it? I'm quite astonished.
Ask the lady, sir.
Oh, mercy. I'm quite analysed for my part. Why, Lydia, what is the reason of this?
Ma'am, you once commanded me never to think of Beverly again. There is the man. I now obey you.
Oh.
For from this moment, I renounce him forever.
Oh, mercy and miracles. What a turn here is. Why, sure, Captain, you haven't behaved disrespectfully to my niece.
Now I see it. Oh. Now I see it. You have been too lively, Jack.
Oh, absolutely. You fie, Captain.
Upon my soul, Mama.
Come, no excuses, Jack. Why, your father, your rogue, was so before you. The blood of the absolutes was always impatient. Poor little Lydia, why, you frightened her, you dog.
By all that's good, sir.
And say no more, I tell you. Mrs. Malaprop shall make your peace. You must make his peace, Mrs. Antony. Malaprop. You must tell us 'tis Jack's way. Tell it 'tis all our ways. It runs in the blood of our family. Come away, Jack. Mrs. Malaprop, young villain.
Oh, Sir Antony. Oh, fie, Captain.
To what fine purpose I have been plotting. I did not think her romance could have made her so damned absurd, either. Steth, I never was in a worse humour in my life. I could cut my own throat, or any other person's, with the greatest pleasure in the world.
Oh, faith, I am in the luck of it. I never could have found him in a sweeter temper for my purpose. With regard to that matter, Captain, I must beg leave to differ in opinion with you.
Upon my word, then, you must be a very subtle disputant, because, sir, I happen just then to be giving no opinion at all.
That's no reason. Forgive me leave to tell you a man may think a non-truth as well as speak one.
Very true, sir, but if a man never utters his thoughts, I should think they might stand a chance of escaping controversy.
Then, sir, you differ in opinion with me, which amounts to the same thing.
Harkee, Sir Lucius. If I had not before known you to be a gentleman, upon my soul, I should not have discovered it at this interview. For what you can drive at, unless you mean to quarrel with me, I cannot conceive.
I humbly thank you, sir, for the quickness of your apprehension. You have named the very thing I would be at.
Very well, sir. I shall certainly not balk your inclinations, but I should be glad you would please to explain your motives.
Oh, pray, sir, be easy. The quarrel is a very pretty quarrel as it stands. We should only spoil it by trying to explain it. So, no more, but name your time and place.
Well, sir, since you are so bent on it, the sooner the better. Let it be this evening, here by the Spring Gardens.
If it's the same to you, Captain, I should take it as a particular kindness if you'd let us meet in Kingsmead Fields, as a little business will call me there about 6 o'clock, and I may dispatch both matters at once.
It is the same to me exactly. A little after 6, then, we will discuss this matter more seriously.
If you please, sir. Ah, there will be very pretty small sword light, though it won't do for a long shot. Oh. So, that matter's settled, and my mind's at ease.
Well met, Jack.
Oh, Falkland, all the demons of spite and disappointment have conspired against me.
What can you mean? Has Lydia changed her mind? I should have thought her duty and inclination would now have pointed to the same object.
Aye, just as the eyes do of a person who squints. And to wind up the whole, a good-natured Irishman here has begged leave to have the pleasure of cutting my throat, and I mean to indulge him, that's all.
Oh, prithee be serious.
This fact upon my soul, Sir Lucius O'Trigger, you know him by sight, for some affront which I'm sure I never intended, has obliged me to meet him this evening at 6 o'clock. You must go with me.
This evening, did you say? Oh, I wish it had been any other time.
Why, there will be light enough. There will, as Sir Lucius says, be a very pretty small sword light. It won't do for a long shot. Confound his long shots.
But I am myself a good deal ruffled by a difference I've had with Julia.
Huh?
My vile, tormenting temper has made me treat her so cruelly, but I shall not be myself till we are reconciled.
By heavens, Falkland, you don't deserve her.
Let her, sir. Miss Melville asked me to seek you out.
Oh, Jack, this is from Julia. I dread to open it.
Here, let me see. Aye, a final sentence indeed.
Oh,
'tis all over with you, Faith.
Oh, nay, Jack, don't keep me in suspense.
Here, then. As I am convinced that my dear Falkland's own reflections have already upbraided him for his last unkindness to me, I will not add a word on the subject. I wish to speak with you as soon as possible. Yours ever and truly, Julia.
Oh,
there's stubbornness and resentment for you. Why, man, you don't seem one whit the happier at this.
Now, Jack, as you are my friend, own honestly, don't you think there is something forward, something indelicate in this haste to forgive? Women should never sue for reconciliation. That should always come from us.
I have not patience to listen to you. That's incorrigible, so say no more on the subject. I must go to settle a few matters. Let me see you before 6, remember, at my lodgings.
Oh, his engaging me in this duel has started an idea in my head which I will instantly pursue. I'll use it as the touchstone of Julia's sincerity and disinterestedness. If her love prove pure and sterling, or my name will rest on it with honour. But if the dross of selfishness, the alloy of pride, predominate, 'twill be best to leave her as a toy for some less cautious fool to sigh for.
How this message has alarmed me. What dreadful accident can he mean? Why such charge to be alone? Oh, Falkland, what means this? Why this caution, Falkland?
Alas, Julia, I am come to take a long farewell.
Heavens, what do you mean?
You see before you a wretch whose life is forfeited.
No.
Nay, start not. The infirmity of my temper has drawn all this misery on me. I left you fretful and passionate. An untoward accident drew me into a quarrel. The event is that I must fly this kingdom instantly.
Oh, had these adverse circumstances arisen from a less fatal cause, I should have felt strong comfort in the thought that I could now chase from your bosom every doubt of the warm sincerity of my love. My heart has long known no other guardian. I now entrust my person to your honor. We will fly together.
Oh, Julia, I am bankrupt in gratitude.
Perhaps your fortune may be forfeited by this unhappy act. Oh, but sure, that alone can never make us unhappy. The little I have will be sufficient to support us. And exile never should be splendid.
Aye, but in such an abject state of life, my wounded pride perhaps may increase the natural fretfulness of my temper till I become a rude, morose companion.
If your thought should assume so unhappy a bent, you will the more want some mild and affectionate spirit to watch over and console you.
Julia, I have proved you to the quick. And with this useless device, I throw away all my doubts. How shall I plead to be forgiven this last unworthy effect of my restless, unsatisfied disposition?
Has no such disaster happened as you related?
I am ashamed to own that it was all pretended.
Hold, Falkland. That you are free from a crime which I before feared to name, heaven knows how sincerely I rejoice. But that your cruel doubt should have urged you to an imposition that has wrung my heart gives me now a pang more keen than I can express.
By heavens, Julia!
After such a year of trial, I might have flattered myself that I should not have been insulted with a new probation of my sincerity, as cruel as unnecessary. I now see it is not in your nature to be content or confident in love. With this conviction, I never will be yours.
She's gone. Forever. There was an awful resolution in her manner that riveted me to my place. Oh, fool, dolt, barbarian! Cursed as I am with more imperfections than my fellow wretches, kind fortune sent a heaven-gifted cherub to my aid, and, like a ruffian, I have driven her from my side. Oh, love, tormentor, fiend!
Oh, Julia, I am come to you with such an appetite for consolation. Lord, child, what's the matter with you? You have been crying. I'll be hanged if that Falkland has not been tormenting you again.
You mistake the cause of my uneasiness. Something has flurried me a little, nothing that you can guess at.
Ah, whatever vexations you may have, I can assure you mine surpass them. You know who Beverley proves to be?
I will now own to you, Lydia, that Mr. Falkland had before informed me of the whole affair.
So, then, I see I have been deceived by everyone. But I don't care. I'll never have him.
Oh, nay, Lydia.
Why, is it not provoking? When I thought we were coming to the prettiest distress imaginable, to find myself made a mere Smithfield bargain of at last. There had I projected one of the most sentimental elopements, so becoming a disguise. 4 horses, Scotch parson, with such surprise to Mrs. Malaprop and such paragraphs in the newspapers. Oh, I shall die with disappointment.
I don't wonder at it.
Now, sad reverse, what have I to expect? But after a deal of flimsy preparation with a bishop's license and my aunt's blessing to go simpering up to the altar, or perhaps be cried 3 times in a country church and have an unmannerly fat clerk ask the consent of every butcher in the parish to join John Absolute and Lydia Languish Spinster. Oh, that I should live to hear myself called Spinster.
Melancholy indeed.
How mortifying to remember the dear, delicious shifts I used to be put to gain 30 minutes conversation with this fellow. How often have I stole forth in the coldest night in January and found him in the garden stuck like a dripping statue. There would he kneel to me in the snow and sneeze and cough so pathetically, he shivering with cold and I with apprehension. And while the freezing blast numbed our joints, how warmly would he press me to pity his flame and glow with mutual ardour. Oh, Julia! That was something like being in love.
Lydia, I earnestly entreat you not to let a man who loves you with sincerity suffer that unhappiness from your caprice, which I know too well caprice can inflict.
Oh, Lord, what has brought my aunt here?
So, here's fine work. Here's fine suicide, parricide, and simulation going on in the fields. And Sir Anthony not to be found to prevent the antistrophe.
Do, ma'am, for heaven's sake, tell us what is the matter.
Why, murder's the matter. Slaughter's the matter. Killing's the matter. But he can tell you the perpendicular.
Then, prithee, sir, be brief. Who are engaged in this?
My master, ma'am, my master.
Heavens! What? Captain Absolute?
Oh, to be sure, you are frightened now.
But who are with him, sir?
As to the rest, ma'am, this gentleman can inform you better than I.
Do speak, friend.
Oh, lucky, my lady, by the mass, there's mischief going on. Folks don't use to meet for amusement with firearms, firelocks, fire engines, fire screens, fire office, and the devil knows what other crackers beside. This, my lady, I say as an angry favour.
But who is there beside Captain Absolute, friend?
Oh, my poor master. Oh, you know me, my lady, I am David, and my master, of course, is, or was, Squire Acres. And then comes Squire Falkland.
Oh, do, ma'am, let us instantly endeavour to prevent mischief.
Oh, fie, it would be very inelegant in us. We should only participate, things.
Oh, do, Mrs. Ant, save a few lives. They are desperately given, believe me. Above all, there's that bloodthirsty Philistine, Sir Lucius O'Trigger.
Sir Lucius O'Trigger? Oh, mercy. Have they drawn poor little dear Sir Lucius into the scrape? Why, how you stand, girl. You have no more feeling than one of the Derbyshire putrefactions.
What are we to do, madam?
Why, fly with the utmost felicity, to be sure, to prevent mischief.
By my valour, then, Sir Lucius, 40 yards is a good distance. Odds, levels, and aims, I say it is a good distance.
Upon my conscience, Mr. Acres, you must leave those things to me. Mm. Stay now. I'll show you. There now. That is a very pretty distance, a pretty gentleman's distance.
Soon's we might as well fight in a sentry box. Oh, I tell you, Sir Lucius, the farther he is off, the cooler I shall take my aim.
Faith, then I suppose you would aim at him best of all if he was out of sight.
Oh, no, Sir Lucius, but I should think 40 or 38 yards.
Oh, nonsense. 3 or 4 feet between the mouths of your pistols is as good as a mile.
Odds, bullets, no. By my valour, there's no merit in killing him so near. Oh, do, my dear Sir Lucius, let me bring him down at a long shot. A long shot, Sir Lucius, if you love me.
Well, the gentleman's friend and I must settle that. Mm. But tell me now, Mr. Acres, in case of an accident, is there any little will or commission I could execute for you?
Oh, I'm much obliged to you, Sir Lucius, but I don't understand.
Why, you may think there's no being shot at without a little risk. And if an unlucky bullet should carry a quietus with it, would you choose to be pickled and sent home, or would it be the same to you to lie here in the abbey? I'm told there's a very snug lion in the abbey.
Pickled, snug, lying in the abbey. Oh, odds, tremors, Sir Lucius, don't talk so.
I suppose, Mr. Acres, you never were engaged in an affair of this kind before.
No, Sir Lucius, never before.
Ah, that's a pity. There's nothing like being used to a thing. Pray, how would you receive the gentleman's shot?
Odds, spoils, I've practiced that now. There, Sir Lucius, there. A side front, eh? Oh, I'll make myself small enough, I'll stand edgeways.
Now, you're quite out, but if you stand so when I take my aim...
Oh, sir, don't, Sir Lucius, are you sure it's not cocked?
Never fear.
No, but you don't know, it may go off of its own end.
Oh, be easy. Well, now, if I hit you in the body, my bullet has a double chance. Mm. For if it misses a vital part on your right side, 'twill be very hard if it don't succeed on the left.
A vital part.
But there, fix yourself so. Oh. Let him see the broad side of your full front. There. Now, a ball or two may pass clean through your body and never do any harm at all.
Clean through me. A ball or two clean through me.
Aye, may they. And it is much the genteelest attitude into the bargain.
Now, looky, Sir Lucius, I just as leave be shot in an awkward posture as a genteel one. So by my valour, I will stand edgeways.
I'm sure they don't mean to disappoint us. Ha! No, Faith, I think I see them coming.
Oh, there are two of them indeed. Well, let them come, eh, Sir Lucius? We won't run, eh?
What the devil's the matter with you?
Nothing, my dear friend, my dear Sir Lucius, but... Well, I don't feel quite so bold somehow as I did. If my valour should leave me, well, valour will come and go.
Then pray keep it fast while you have it.
Oh, Sir Lucius, I doubt he's going.
Yes, my valor's certainly going. It's sneaking off. I feel it oozing out, as it were, at the palms of my hands.
Oh, fie, consider your honour. Oh. Here they are.
Oh, mercy, now that I was safe at Clodagh, or could be shot before I was aware.
Gentlemen, you're most obedient.
Sir.
Ha! What, Captain Absolute?
What, Jack? Oh, my dear Jack, my dear friend.
Harky, Bob, Beverly's at hand.
Well, Mr. Akers, I don't blame your saluting the gentleman civilly. So, Mr. Beverly, if you'll choose your weapons, the captain and I will measure the ground.
My weapons?
Life, Sir Lucius, I'm not going to fight Mr. Falkland. Why, these are my particular friends.
What, sir? Did you not come here to fight Mr. Akers?
Not I, upon my word, sir.
Well, now, that's mighty provoking. But I hope, Mr. Falkland, as there are three of us come on purpose for the game, you won't be so cantankerous as to spoil the party by sitting out.
Oh, pray, Falkland, fight to oblige Sir Lucius.
Nay, if Mr. Akers is so bent on the matter...
Mr. Falkland, I'll bear my disappointment like a Christian. Now, looky, Sir Lucius, there's no occasion at all for me to fight, and if it's the same to you, I'd as leave let it alone.
Observe me, Mr. Akers, I must not be trifled with. You have certainly challenged somebody, and you came here to fight him. Now, if that gentleman is willing to represent him, I can't see for my soul why it isn't just the same thing.
We know, Sir Lucius, I tell you, 'tis one Beverly I've challenged. A fellow you see that dare not show his face. Now, if he were here, I'd make him give up his pretensions directly.
Hold, Bob. Let me set you right. There is no such man as Beverly in the case. The person who assumed that name is before you, and as his pretensions are the same in both characters, he is ready to support them in whatever way you please.
Well, this is lucky. Now you have an opportunity to prove your...
Quarrel with my dear friend Jack Absolute, not if he were 50 Beverleys. Zoon, Sir Lucius, you would not have me so unnatural.
Upon my conscience, Mr. Akers, your valor has oozed away with a vengeance.
Not in the least. Odds... backs and abettors, I'll be your second with all my heart. And if you should get a quietus, you may command me entirely. I'll get you snug lying in the abbey here, or pickle you and send you over to Blunderbuss Hall, or anything of the kind. With the greatest pleasure.
Foe, you are little better than a coward.
Oh, mind, gentlemen, he calls me a coward. Coward was the word by my valour.
Well, sir...
Looky, Sir Lucius, isn't that I mind the word coward? Well, coward may be said in joke, but, well, if you'd called me a poltroon, odds, daggers and balls...
Well, sir?
Well, I should have thought you a very ill-bred man.
Foe, you are beneath my notice.
Nay, Sir Lucius, you can't have a better second than my friend Akers. He's a most determined dog, called in the country Fighting Bob. He generally kills a man a week, don't you, Bob?
Aye, at home.
Well then, Captain, 'tis we must begin. So, come out, my little counsellor, and ask the gentleman whether he will resign the lady without forcing you to proceed against him.
Come on then, sir. Since you won't let it be an amicable suit, here's my reply.
And knock him down, sweet sir Anthony. Knock down my master in particular, and bind his hands over to their good behaviour.
Put out, Jack. Put up, or I should be in a frenzy.
Sir.
Oh, came you in a duel, sir?
Faith, sir, that gentleman can tell you better than I. That gentleman called me out without explaining his reasons.
Get, sir, how came you to call my son out without explaining your reasons?
Your son, sir, insulted me in a manner which my honour could not brook.
Zounds, Jack, how durst you insult the gentleman in a manner which his honour could not brook?
Come, come, let's have no honour before ladies. Captain Absolute, come here.
Ma'am.
How could you intimidate us so? Here's Lydia has been terrified to death for you.
For fear I should be killed or escaped, ma'am.
Nay, no delusions to the past. Lydia is convinced. Speak, child.
With your leave, ma'am, I must put in a word here. I believe I could interpret the young lady's silence. Now, Mark...
What is it you mean, sir?
Oh, come, Delia. We must be serious now. This is no time for trifling.
'Tis true, sir. And your approof bids me offer this gentleman my hand and solicit the return of his affections.
Oh, my little angel. Say you so.
Oh.
Sir Lucius, I ask your pardon. But for this lady, while honored with her approbation, I will support my claim against any man whatever.
Well, Sir Jack, and I'll stand by you, my boy.
Mind, I give up all my claim. I make no pretensions to anything in the world. And if I can't get a wife without fighting for her, by my valor, I live a bachelor, eh?
Captain, give me your hand. An affront handsomely acknowledged becomes an obligation. And as for the lady, if she chooses to deny her own handwriting... Here, peruse these letters.
Letters?
Oh, he will dissolve my mystery. Sir Lucius, perhaps there's some mistake. Perhaps I can illuminate.
Pray, old gentlewoman, don't interfere where you have no business.
Oh.
Miss Languish, are you my Delia or not?
Indeed, Sir Lucius, I am not.
Sir Lucius O'Trigger, ungrateful as you are, I own the soft impeachment. Pardon my blushes. I am Delia.
You, Delia? Be easy.
Why, the barbarous Van Dyke. Those letters are mine. When you are more sensible of my benignity, perhaps I may be brought to encourage your addresses.
Mrs. Malaprop, I am extremely sensible of your condescension. And whether you or Lucy have put Lucy? This trick on me, I am equally beholden to you. And to show you I am not ungrateful, Captain Absolute, since you have taken that lady from me, I'll give you my Delia into the bargain.
I am much obliged to you, Sir Lucius. But here's my friend Fighting Bob unprovided for.
Ha! Little Valor. Here, will you make your fortune?
Ooh, odds, wrinkles, no. But give me your hand, Sir Lucius. Forget and forgive. But if ever I give you a chance of pickling me again, I'll say Bob Acres is a dunce, that's all.
Come, Mrs. Malaprop, don't be cast down. You're in your bloom yet.
Oh, Sir Anthony, men are all barbarians.
Falkland seems dejected and unhappy, not sullen. There was some foundation, however, for the tale he told me. Oh, woman, how true should be your judgment when your resolution is so weak.
Julia, how can I sue for what I so little deserve?
Oh, Falkland, you have not been more faulty in your unkind treatment of me than I am now in wanting inclination to resent it. As my heart honestly bids me place my weakness to the account of love, I should be ungenerous not to admit the same plea for yours.
Now I shall be blessed indeed.
What's going on here? So you have been quarrelling too, I warrant. Come, Julia, I've never interfered before, but let me have a hand in the matter at last. All the faults I've ever seen in my friend Falkland seem to proceed from what he calls the delicacy and warmth of his affection for you. There, marry him directly, Julia. You'll find he'll mend surprisingly.
Come now, I hope there's no dissatisfied person but what is content. For as I have been disappointed myself, it will be very hard if I have not the satisfaction of seeing other people succeed better.
You're right, Sir Lucius. So, Jack, I wish you joy, Mr. Falkland, the same. Ladies, come now. To show you I'm neither vexed nor angry, odds, tabors and pipes, I'll order the fiddles in half an hour to the new rooms, and I insist on your all meeting me there.
Jack, sir, I like your spirit. And at night we single lads will drink a health to the young couples and a husband to Mrs. Malaprop.
Our partners are stolen from us, Jack. I hope to be congratulated by each other. Yours for having checked in time the errors of an ill-directed imagination, which might have betrayed an innocent heart. And mine for having, by her gentleness and candor, reformed the unhappy temper of one who by it made wretched whom he loved most, and tortured the heart he ought to have adored.
Well, Falkland, we have both tasted the bitters as well as the sweets of love, with this difference only, that you always prepared the bitter cup for yourself, while I...
Was always obliged to me for it, hey, Mr. Modesty? But come, no more of that. Our happiness is now as unalloyed as general.
Then let us study to preserve it so.
Flora Robson played Mrs. Malaprop in The Rivals by Richard Brinsley Sheridan. Sir Anthony Absolute was played by Peter Pratt, Lydia Languish by Christine Finn, Captain Absolute by Bernard Brown, and Bob Acres by William Ingram. Julia, Rosalind Shanks, Falkland, Peter Tuddenham, Sir Lucius O'Trigger, Dennis Hawthorne, Lucy, Barbara Mitchell, Fag, Christopher Bidmead, David, Ronald Herdman, and Thomas, Alan Dudley. Other parts were played by Carol Marsh and Leroy Lingwood. The play was produced by Betty Davis.